everybody. This is James Martinez live. We are coming to you with the return of a special guest we had on a long time ago. You've heard me talk about him before. Ron Miller from technocracy.org is here today with us today. You may recall, if you've gone into the archives, that I did an interview with him probably at least a year ago. And since then, the whole world has dramatically changed financially. I initially brought Mr. Ron Miller on because I wanted to hear other ideas of what is possible and sustaining a government that actually works, seeing as the financial collapse and it's the end of the U.S. in terms of the dollar. It's being announced all over the world. We've got riots happening all over the world. Massive changes are happening all over the place. It's now standard news that they're going to be initiating this sequence. And we've got a revolution appearing in England, all over Europe, but starting in the U.S. on most other fringe networks and other alternative media. They're covering this almost every single day. People are starting to wake up and starting to address other issues. Now, one of the other issues that I wanted to bring up that a lot of people haven't heard of, and I wanted to reissue this to have a kind of refresher course in the possibilities here, is technocracy.org. Now, we had Ron Miller on before, so I want to welcome him back. Ron Miller, how you doing, and welcome back.
Just fine. Glad to be on.
Good, good. I'm excited to hear the changes that technocracy.org has gone through, because I'm sure you're getting a lot more interest now and a lot more media coverage than you did last time that I talked to you.
Well, actually, only a little bit more. It's a little bit. It's certainly a long ways from a stampede. Essentially, what we are seeing right now is people trying to figure out some way to fix the system to make it work better, the same system. Whereas what technocracy is saying is that the application of science and technology and energy to our system has made it obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no amount of fixing that is going to fix it.
Right. Well, let's just start off with, for the people that are hearing for you for the first time, what give us a definition of what technocracy is.
All right, what technocracy is, essentially, it's not really even an ideology so much as it is simply a plan. What the organization did in the 1930s was essentially it produced a series of graphs showing employment as a function of production. And what happens is the one place where this really shows up glaringly, more obvious, is in our oldest industry, and that's agriculture. In 1830 or so, approximately 70 to 80% of the people lived and made their livings on the farm. Today, we're down to probably a little bit under 2% of the people left still living on farms. And those people are producing more than anyone in history to this point. Not that will continue if we keep depleting our resources. But what it does is it shows the point. One of the reports that I read the other day, I really wish I could remember where I read that. What they are saying is that now with the new programming and robots, that they are expecting in the next couple of years that there will be at least one robot for every 5,000 workers. And
right.
We're going to start seeing robots in action, you know. They are saying, for instance, in some occupations, legal assistants will almost disappear. Pharmacists will be basically out of business. A lot of retail business is going to be taken over by that. And it goes on and on and on. The Army uses a great number of robots right now.
Yeah,
and,
they do.
There's going to be that is only going to increase in dramatically.
Mm-hmm. Where did the concept of technocracy? Where did it originate? Who originated it and put it together?
It was Howard Scott was the founder of the organization. That the organization actually started in the late 1910s, in 1919, 1920, so on and so forth, when essentially they did an energy survey of the North American continent, its resources, and essentially what was available. And they came to the conclusion that we could, you know, that we essentially on the North American continent could provide everybody with a very good standard of living without any substantial strain at all. Of course, since that time, we've added a whole lot more people and eliminated a lot more resources. So so some things have changed. And but the essential, the core statement is that the application of technology and energy to our social system is going to destroy the system that we have known. We've had a price system, has been running our system for about the last 7,000 years. And when I say a price system is the system that underlies all the ideological systems that we have now, whether it's capitalism or communism or fascism or socialism or any other variant of any of those things. They all operate on a price system. What technocracy says is that it is the price system itself that is crumbling.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And
now,
essentially what technocracy said was, rather than seeing this as a problem, technocracy saw this as an opportunity to produce a system based on a non-price system that essentially would be a social system far simpler and easier to operate than any social system we have seen, at least in a very long time, until maybe you get down to a tribal level. And at the same time, a system that could produce, essentially provide people with the standard of living that they need and want.
Right, right, right. Now, some of these concepts, you know, when I initially looked at this, and I had you on quite some time ago, I looked at this and I said, you know, to myself, I was like, why isn't this discussed more in colleges, universities? Because I never heard anything about it at all. Maybe I just missed the boat because I lived internationally.
No, you did not miss the boat. They made absolutely certain that you missed the boat.
Yeah.
You know, it is the real problem is, and this is a problem not with human beings in general. People develop a certain world view. You know, they develop a complete picture in their mind of how the world works.
Mm-hmm.
And when you bring up something such as technocracy, it is so far out of their view, they really don't understand what you're talking about at all.
Yeah,
and I've gone in,
right.
And you know, I've gone into some of the schools from because I used to give a lot of talks in high schools, I've gone into colleges, you know, and talked to some of the professors about some of this, and they don't want to talk to me at all. Not at all.
Really, really, they an open institution of. Learning and open ideas, they just shut you out.
Absolutely, yes. They don't want to hear it. No.
What was the rebuttal and resistance to that? I mean, I could understand why they wouldn't, but what are their reasonings for even, you know, stopping you?
Most of the time, they didn't give me any reason at all. I just said,
that's awful.
We have nothing more to talk about.
Oh, my God.
There was no discussion at all.
Thanks, Ron. We had enough of you. Get out of here. Basically.
Well, if they'd been that polite, that would have been a little bit better. But usually they aren't even that polite. So, you know,
what about at a high school level? They won't even allow that
at
either?
At the high school level, things are a little bit different because from time to time I have found teachers that were open to the idea. It wasn't so much that they were open to the idea initially, as it was they saw it as something controversial that would get the kids cranked up. And they were absolutely right about that. Usually when I presented, they only ask one thing, that I present, keep my presentation to about 20 minutes, which is difficult to do. And then so that the kids could ask questions. What kind of questions would they ask, though,
based on 20 minutes?
Almost invariably, the very first question there were other ones, but the most frequent question I got was, well, if we don't have a price system anymore, then how could you conduct foreign trade? You know? Mm-hmm. Which I thought was interesting that seemed to come up so many times.
Mm-hmm. So you're dealing with basically, this is what I'm getting, this concept is so foreign to people that you get complete cognitive dissonance, blank faces, yes. misunderstanding,
right.
And conceptually, like, where the hell is this coming from, and who are you to talk about this, basically, is what I'm getting.
Yeah.
Correct?
Some of the responses that I got from different students at times were, well, to say the least, memorable, you know.
right.
I remember there was one guy, and there was one kid, and I could just almost see, you know, the CEO stenciled onto his forehead. And mm-hmm. the problem for him was that he completely understood what I was saying, but mm-hmm. he wasn't happy at all. He didn't want this to be, you know, he's all set up to run a corporation. He doesn't, you know, so for him, it was just really horrifying, because he did understand exactly what I was saying. And I know I've had other students come up to me afterwards, almost in tears. You can't possibly mean what you said. Yes, I did. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Another time I thought was one of the greatest questions I ever got from a student was a girl who asked me. Well, she said, well, if nobody's getting paid to do anything and nobody has to do anything, who will take out the garbage? And I thought that was a great question.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was trying to formulate an answer in my mind when one of the other girls in the class spoke up and she says, well, maybe if it's a job like that everybody has to do, maybe if everybody took a turn, then nobody could complain. And
there
all
you
I
go.
Could say was, there's your answer, you know, and there is your answer to the questions that you're having trouble answering, is that it's you people yourselves that will find those answers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, what about the part, because I looked on your website, and I was the first thing I looked at, and I was really interested and shocked, well, not so much shocked, but very happy to see that on the selected poll there, it says a no money society. And 62% said definitely that they would want a no money society. It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's just terrific. I think the problem is that a lot of these people are beginning to look at this and saying, hey, it's beginning to make more sense to a lot of people. But, you know, right now it's still it's a small percentage of people. You know, mm-hmm. that are beginning to take a good hard look and say, yes, this does make sense. Now, when we say no money, though, we don't mean no control. What mm-hmm. the organization proposed was that the amount of energy that is required to produce every single thing, you know, that society needs, should be accounted for, and that everyone would be given their share, you know, simply by dividing between the population, mm-hmm. of the amount of energy, you know, over a given budgeting period. And then when you go into a store or anything else, that amount of energy would be deducted so that we could keep track of what's going where and so on and so forth. You have to still have to have a feedback mechanism, for instance, you know, so that the warehouses know that they're beginning to run out of a particular product, and the warehouse can tell the manufacturer they need more, so on and so forth. And energy, the reason why we chose energy is because energy is the most fundamental constituent of anything physical.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
In the universe, there's really only two things in the universe, matter and energy. Without energy, there is no motion, there is no movement. It requires energy to dig materials out of the ground. It requires energy to turn them into products, so on and so forth. And most of the time, we don't measure it, but we certainly could. One of the real problems, too, that we have when you talk about money is that, and this is one of the things that I make sure to explain to the kids in the classroom, you know, is that money is not wealth. It is not wealth at all. Wealth is the chairs they're sitting on, the buildings they're sitting in, the houses they go home to, the cars they drive in. That's wealth, not money. Money is just a pile of paper.
Right. Certainly is today.
Yeah.
Now, when let me ask you this, because the reason I wanted to have you on again, and I think about technocracy all the time, and I've talked with the possibilities to other people, and there's just the social conditioning of the education and people's mindset. It's either two things: it's totally shut off, or it's in a state of total confusion, catastrophe, where they're looking for answers and new ideas. Now, I consider this one a potentially great idea. Now that you are, you know, you've been a part of this for quite some time, are your colleagues in the fields of science? Are they in the fields of law? Were they in the fields of education? Because I know it's not you just standing alone. There's lots of people that must be involved with this organization.
Well, believe me, there's relatively few of us now, you know. But one of the amazing things is, and one of the really difficult things is, that technocrats seem to be where you find them. We have people from absolutely every single sphere of life in the organization. There doesn't seem to be any kind of a marker at all, you know. Now, I'm an engineer, and I work with engineers. Well, you would think, you know, that a group of engineers would really, you know, latch on to an idea like this. No.
Surely.
No. When I sat around in the break room, you know, taking a break, you know, when I was still working, and listen, what you hear in the conversation, you know, is whose boat they're going out on next weekend, you know, or what's going on with the latest game going on, you know, what their wives are doing that mostly they don't want to do, and, you know, all this nonsense, you know. And if you bring up something, bring up a subject like this, you would get the same response that you've seen before, a blank look. Just a blank stare. Right. What are you talking about? Yeah. And
so education is primarily the problem. Education and publicity is the main issues, because if you can't stand before people in an open format, especially in high schools or colleges, you know, good luck, basically.
Well, you know, it had to do – it was interesting to – for instance, that I used to go up and talk at the high school in the little town up on the peninsula in Washington. When we first started in there, what happened was, of course, we had a couple of, you know, rather enthusiastic members that lived up in the area, and they talked to one of their high school teachers there. And he said, okay, this sounds like something that'll get the kids cranked up, you know, and give them something to make them think. And so I came in, and for the first two or three years, he just sat in the background, you know. He was always polite, you know, and didn't talk to me too much. And after having me come up there for two or three years, he really began to absorb this stuff. And he began to realize, wait a minute, you know, this is for real. And it got to the point, usually what would happen is I would go up there for about 3 days. And by the time I left, he said, once I left, he said, for the next week, he said, that was the whole topic of conversation and going on everywhere, you know. But he got to the point where he knew enough himself that he could answer some of the kids' questions himself.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So that was rather interesting. And then the last thing I got was through a friend again. You know, and this was a friend, a lady who's not a member at all, but her daughter went to the school up in a little center of Washington, little town up there, one of the little exurbs, you know. And she had me come in for quite a few years, and I used to give talks up there. But again, now this was an the thing too was that I didn't start off talking about technocracy at all.
Right.
When I went in to her class initially, she had me talking about the First and Second World War because I'd done quite a bit of reading on them. And that gradually, eventually evolved into, you know, technocracy.
So you did the historical lead-in, then you come to technocracy.
No,
and then how is it received?
You know, it's usually received the same way. Some people really understand it. And occasionally mm-hmm. there's a few people that just, you know, they really understand what is being said. Other people, it just goes clear past them because they really don't understand what I'm saying at all. And other
right.
people are just horrified, you know.
They call you a communist.
I
if they think it's a communist.
Pardon?
They think it's some kind of communist or socialist issue.
Oh, well, yeah. They always do.
Mm-hmm.
That's mm-hmm. one of the things, because people feel, you know, if it isn't our system, then it must be the other system, you know.
Uh-huh.
And
right.
they don't know what pigeonhole to put it in. So they're always looking for a slot to put it into, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that technocracy really doesn't fit into any of those slots. And I don't know. I gave a talk in one class up there, and that was only one time. I gave that talk. The guy, one of the other teachers where I had been giving the talk, told him about it. So he said, well, he had me come in there, but boy, one time, and that was it. And he had two classes, and they were one followed the other. And I was in, and I'd given the talk to the first class, and then the kids were going out while the other bunch of kids was coming in, and apparently two of these, one guy coming in and another one going out, knew each other. And it's kind of a cross between Star Trek and Nova. And I thought, whoa, really? That's interesting.
You never know what you're going to get, Ron Miller.
it's been really interesting that, you know, some of the responses that I've gotten. But most of the, you know, most of the things that bothered people, you know, I learned early on what it was that really bothered people most, and just gradually included those things into the talk so that they were covered.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right, right.
And
now, when we come after the break, I want you to go ahead and kind of give a kind of outline of, let's figure out a territory or a country. Maybe this one, doesn't matter, where if you were to institute technocracy, what would be expected from the public, and how it would function, and how people would live, what their living conditions would be like. If there's no money, what does that mean in terms of time? What is that going to change into the psychological ramifications of being in a society like that? Because it seems to me, based upon what you've said, and when people hear this for the first time, the psychological abrupt change is the biggest barrier. So I want to talk to you about that. So formulate your answer. Think about it for a second. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with more with Ron Miller with technocracy.org. This is James Martinez Live. We'll be back right after this.
Tomorrow's rain washes tears away. To AchieveRadio.com. The future is now.
Finding Your Way, Intuitive Messages for the Mind, Body, and Spirit, brings together for the very first time two psychic mediums and a medical intuitive for a fascinating all-day workshop, Saturday, April 9th in Andover, Mass. Join Hay House author and psychic medium John Holland, medical intuitive and author Carol Reitberger, and psychic medium Lauren Rainbow for an enlightening day as they deliver readings and messages from the other side. Tickets are available now through johnholland.com.
Hello, this is Paul McNeese of OPA Author Services. For a long time, I've believed that every author should be a speaker and every speaker should write. So today, I'm here to let you know that if you're an author or a speaker, trainer, consultant, coach, or seminar leader, there's a new nest being built just for you at AuthorsRoost.com. The Author's Roost is a new concept, a new idea, an internet membership organization, and a portal website that brings authors, speakers, and experts together with each other with lots of great information and education and with their marketplaces, including media all over the country and with local, regional, and national meeting planners, people who hire speakers every day. The Author's Roost is definitely going to be a place where you can learn and teach and grow by interacting with others who, like you, are willing to share their ideas and experience. So, take a look right now at The Author's Roost, AuthorsRoost.com. I think you'll be very glad you did.
Hi, this is Jane Elizabeth, professional psychic medium astrologer and author of Messages of the Stars, inviting you to join me live right here on AchieveRadio.com every Sunday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time for some real astrology. I work with an astrological house system that begins with Sagittarius and completes with Scorpio, revealing the pre-written path. I invite you to call in with your question. All I need is your first name and birth date. So please join me live right here on AchieveRadio.com, Sundays from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
AchieveRadio.com.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. This is James Martinez. Special guest today is Ron Miller with Technocracy.org. Okay, Ron, I set up those questions for you because I want to know. Let's just pretend here we've got a country, not necessarily this one, any country, where they've all decided, okay, we've had enough of everything else. It's not worked. We're not happy. We want to do something different. What are we going to do? Let's do this. Okay. Tell us what you would say how a country would be. Describe how it would be, the living circumstances, how we would live.
All right. There would be numbers of things, of course, you know, that simply wouldn't change very much. You know, people still have to have homes, some place to live. They still have to eat and so on and so forth and go about their business. But when you no longer have a price system, there's a whole bunch of things you don't need anymore. You don't need Wall Street. In fact, it becomes worthless, pointless. It can't exist. Neither can corporations exist. The banking system becomes obviously non-existent, just an empty building. Most of the financial structure that we have now essentially would disappear. We're certainly not going to need the advertising that we have anymore. There's going to be a huge numbers of things that that connected with the financial system that we are not going to need. A great deal of what is left can and should be automated very, very quickly, you know, in some cases. And so immediately what the organization proposed was that a person should maybe start work at about 25 and then retire at 45. And I think that even with a framework of only 20 years of working, I think even at that you would have trouble finding, you know, work for a lot of people. Now, that having been said, we're going to have to completely reconstruct, rebuild our infrastructure as it is now. It's at a minimum inadequate, at a minimum,
right,
if not downright dangerous in some cases. It needs to be drastically converted into something that uses far less energy. Using magnetically levitated trains, now we could have trains that would go, you know, 300 to 400 miles an hour, you know, out in the open. And if you could go that fast on a train between cities, you wouldn't be using very many aircraft. We certainly need to do something, serious. We need to do something rather drastic with our personal transportation systems. Maybe not something quite as tricky as carbon fiber, but there are certainly a lot of other building materials out there that are similar that would work just as well, that are, you know, not anywhere near as expensive, and would work just fine, you know.
Right.
I know Volkswagen now in the latest popular mechanics, there's a picture of a new Volkswagen that gets 258 miles to the gallon. And that's possible.
What's the energy source for that?
I believe it's a diesel driven hybrid. Needless to say, they didn't give you very many details because it's one of their prototypes, and so they're not going to tell you a whole lot about what's under the hood.
Sure.
In any case, it's been verified by other people as well. They're not just taking their word for it. But these sorts of solutions are out there, you know. Another one, for instance, one of these off things that people don't think about at all is one of our largest industries, for instance, is producing something like concrete. We use lots of it. And several people now have come up with an idea. One of the things that concrete, in fact, is one of those industries that produces probably a very, very large amount of carbon dioxide, which goes into the air. And there are several people now who have come up with a new process for producing concrete that essentially takes it right out of the air. And it actually eliminates carbon dioxide out of the air. And so there are lots of things out there right now that not very many people are doing with. Now, for instance, something like the magnetically levitated trains, you know, there's lots of people, you know, Chinese have built them. They have them in regular operation. But, of course, the moment that you try to do something like that here, everybody, all the big corporations start screaming right away.
Of course.
You know,
we wouldn't have that. In our society that we're talking about, because we're talking – what I'm trying to envision is you and the powers that be of technocracy have – you're in charge now. So and being in charge, I want to just – What are we going to be doing as far as, like, if I start work at 25, what's my work day? And if there's no money, what am I doing? What's my trade craft? When I get food, how do we distribute food? All those things. What about that?
Exactly what I said before. We're still going to have supermarkets, you know.
Uh-huh.
Needless to say, you know, it would probably be robots running most of them. Also, when we said when you start work at 25 and 45, we also said that a person should work 4 hours a day, 4 days a week. So
okay,
that's
most people will love that. people will love that.
Yeah. I don't think a lot of people are going to have a problem with that. The other thing is too that I think jobs are going to be become kind of a premium to the point where it'll become almost a status symbol to actually have a job.
I see. That's an interesting effect.
But because a person doesn't have a job does not mean that they're not part of the society. They're every much a part of the society as everybody else. But mm-hmm. there are two, we're going to have, we would expect to see a dramatic expansion of the arts, literature, all of the things that people do will begin to explode. Things like all of the sciences and so on and so forth, because people will want something to do, and they will want something to do with their time and with their lives that is of value.
So that's an interesting effect that you're saying 4 hours a day, because the first thing I thought is like, well, you have a lot of extra time. That means people are going to fill those time gaps probably with things to stimulate their mind, more education. What would education be like in a technocracy society?
Well, just take whatever we have now and say multiply it by 10 or at least, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
is education free? Is it free now?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So somebody can go to Harvard if they want to.
I suspect that a good many, especially higher learning institutions, will probably still they will insist on some kind of they want to know that you're actually capable of doing the work if you're going to take up a chair, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that gives equal status. So if somebody is, can handle going to Harvard, all right, they can pass to get in. They don't have to worry about the money part, so they can go.
Not at all. No.
Okay. All right.
And so what we're going to see, I think, is just an explosion of human inventiveness and creativity.
So this, in a sense, totally eliminates a lot of social issues having to do with class, blacks, whites.
Yeah.
All
there
these
is no
other
class.
Issues
there is
having
one
to do
class.
With. So that,
in fact, the only
that's
way
a levels
that a person,
the playing field dramatically.
Yeah, the only way that a person could really, essentially, you know, differentiate himself from the people around him by what it is that he contributes to the society.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about our court system?
The organization did have an allowance for that. You do have to have a court system, but when you really, for instance, take a look at the legal processes and the court systems that we have today, you find that about 95% of it is involved with property crime.
Mm-hmm,
in other words,
mm-hmm,
people
right.
stealing money or something like that,
right.
you know.
Right. I agree.
Because, you know, either they want more or they feel like they don't have enough. And so that's about 95% of all crime becomes impossible to commit. Now,
yeah, that's an interesting point to bring up there. That's a very interesting point. Because as I'm sitting here and I'm envisioning going into your society of this technocracy, I see, like, my desires dramatically change. Desires change because I'm allowed more. Allowed more. I have more time. I'm working 4 hours a day. I can, as long as I have the chops, I can go to the school wherever I want to as
That's
a status
right.
symbol. It changes all the implications of competition, too, between people.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, it's just also – when you take a look at the problems that go on between people where, you know, people get into trouble with the law, almost all of it revolves around money.
Sure, always.
Especially
right.
If you're looking at problems between married couples and so on and so forth. Almost exclusively, it's money. You know, that
right.
is
sure.
is the principal problem, and that's a thing. That's another thing too that people are going to have to stop and think about is that people won't. There's going to be no money compelling a person to stay in a relationship that they don't want to anymore.
Exactly.
And so you're not going to have handlebars on them anymore, you know.
Sure,
if they
sure,
stay with
sure.
you, it's because they want to stay with you.
And you know, that's a whole other thing, too, that's an interesting effect of this is because it has such a dramatic effect on interrelationships between
yeah.
classes, between men and women, between competition, between – it ends racism
yeah.
on many levels.
Right.
It's a whole other level that's why I wanted you to have you back because – this is such an important thing because I think it would be more possible to institute something like this in underdeveloped countries rather than ones that are propped up and highly industrialized like the U.S. and England and things like that, like underdeveloped places.
I really don't think so because the level of technological sophistication isn't there. It could, you know, it could. Societies like that would have to have a much larger fraction of their population working at least for a while, you know, until mm-hmm. they could, you know, because a lot of those societies don't really even produce quite enough energy to support mm-hmm. the sort of a system that we have now.
Right.
And
if the people are listening to this conversation, they'd probably think, you know, these guys sound like they're talking about communism. And it, on the surface, it may sound like that because everybody's going to be equal, but we don't have an entity that's controlling, that has all the money, that's going to dictate morals, that's going to tell us what to do, that's going to yes, no, that's going to censor, that's going to...
No.
It's a free society that the desire to steal, to want more, to hoard... I need this, you can't have this, this is mine, this is not yours. It totally destroys all of that, right?
Yeah, it absolutely does. Also, the organization itself produced a design to operate a society like that. And essentially, it would be the same system that we have today, but organized a little bit differently. And the only object or function of a government would simply be to operate the machinery that keeps us all alive.
Mm-hmm. So that would be the key component. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you would essentially, you know, all of the people who operate steel mills all over the country, you know, for instance, would appoint one particular person to represent them on a continental board. And all mm-hmm. of the people, say in high schools or in colleges, you know, in schools of one kind or another, would select one person who they felt was represented them best to sit on that continental board. And you would take we looked at one point. There might be as many as 100 different sequences, you know. Like some of the like warehousing and so on and so forth, you know, that all operate, you know, that we need to operate in order to make our society function. And the Continental Board would function about the way that a corporate board does today. It would sit down, it would have to plan for the future. How many new plants are we going to need mm-hmm. in these particular areas? Which ones have gotten obsolete that we should get rid mm-hmm. of? Where mm-hmm. should we site new plants, which would be, you know, the best areas to do that? What should we do about our energy situation, so on and so forth? And establish, mm-hmm. you know, do the necessary planning and put these things into action.
Okay, what would happen? Okay, say we have a society living under these conditions. It's been going this way. Say we have a society living under these technocracy conditions. It's been around for 10 years. Technologies evolve. There's going to be obsolete technologies replaced by new technologies, enveloping,
right.
putting a kind of envelope over them. What would the human race look like or a country look like after, let's say, if you could envision a society being like that for 20 years? When the technocracy was put together, did they consider all the effects of what it would be, overpopulation, all the things that are going to happen? Because I like the idea of this because it gets rid of a lot of problems, but
yeah.
I'm not sure of other conditions that would occur as a result of this. Because the first thing I think is that most people are going to have a major identity crisis. Because all the desires, all the motivations, all the status, all the identity associated with I have this and you don't, I've got this type of identity, I've achieved this, I own this, I run you, you work for me, that's all gone. So
yeah.
you got a society, but it's a much gentle, more peaceful place.
Much more respectful
yes.
society.
Yes.
The guy
yes.
sweeping the floor is just as important as the guy doing the design work on a new space shuttle. You know,
mm-hmm,
the work
mm-hmm.
that they're doing is important. It needs to be done. And, and no one would be differentiated any much more than one or the other. But of course, there's going to be very, very much fewer people capable of designing a shuttle than there are those sweeping a floor, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a difference. But,
right. As I listen to you talk about it, I love the idea of it. My only problem was that I think that, as you do when you're confronted and speaking in front of a classroom or something, just the mere identity crisis that one would go through, like, what am I to do with all this extra time? You mean I'm going to have working four hours a day? I mean, I'm going to get married to somebody that's not marrying me for money? It's not a status. I mean, it changes everything, and it does fantastic effects. Incredible.
Yes, 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 it does. It is a society that is as different from what we have now as the difference between night and day. It's going to be,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It would be absolutely, totally different. And I also think it's the only way that we can move forward, because what we are running into now with the system that we have is one brick wall after another, and none of them either look or feel very good.
No, and, I agree. So you, in your, with other people that you know in technocracy, do you, all of you kind of mutually agree that sometime in the future, this will be the way people are going to have to live to survive,
yes.
for society
yes.
to continue.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. That's a really interesting thing.
Also, the one thing that you brought up is a very serious concern to us, and I think it would also be a serious concern in a technocracy, and that is overpopulation. This cannot go on this way. You know, we are not going to occupy the entire planet with one person on every square foot. That mm-hmm, is not mm-hmm. going to work.
Yeah, because if I'm going to work 4 hours a day and I got this woman over here, I got mm-hmm. a lot of extra time with her.
Yes,
I got a lot of extra time now.
That's
I'm much more
true.
Attractive now. She actually
However,
likes me, not because of my car and because of my houses and everything else. It's a whole different relationship now.
So, yes, it is.
Overpopulation is a big deal.
Yeah. Now, I know that's one of the things that the kids would bring up to me. Was, well, gee, a person could have as many kids as they want. And I said, do you really want the responsibility of raising a dozen kids? You know,
mm-hmm.
do you want that kind of uproar in your life? Because that will completely occupy your entire life, if you have a dozen kids. Totally.
Right.
You will have
right.
no time to yourself. You will have, you're going to be completely busy. Your almost every minute of your day is going to be fully occupied. And
mm-hmm.
And not by what you want, but by what they want and need. So,
right.
it's going to make people stop and think the way that they stop and think now. How many how much and how many of this do I want, you know? Now, when it comes to, keeping busy and wondering what to do with all that time, I've been retired now for, a few years. And, of course, when you're retired, people sort of look at you and say, well, gee, you got all kinds of time. You don't have any, you're not working. Really? Let me tell you, I am fully occupied. I am busy all the time. I have a reading backlog that would stagger a librarian. And I am far from bored.
Well, you know what? I hope it's my hope, Ron Miller, that you get on, and now is the time that I think that you'll be received the most, because people are sick and tired of the mess, and they know the system is not working. They know what's up. More people are being educated on what's going to happen with this one world government that they're trying to institute. It's a complete, total revolution that we're at, and I hope that you get on lots of radio stations, because this concept needs to be discussed just conceptually, even if nobody even moves forward. People need to know that something like this could exist and we could go to a better place.
Yes, I agree.
I think it's a first crime is that you should be allowed to speak at universities and places of higher education without any censorship, without the state coming in and worrying that everybody's going to get, freak out from what you're saying. I think that's the first problem right there, and I hope that you can break through the barriers to go speak to students, because students today, they would listen to you. They would hear this.
I would think so, too. To begin with, I got pretty good responses from a lot of the kids. Like I said, there was always those few that were just, horrified. And and then there was a few that really did understand it. And there are others that were angry,
Sure. We're totally out of time, but I'm gonna have to have you on, and I'd like to have you on with a colleague of yours in the future, or maybe even a student come on to talk about this, because I think more people need to hear about it. I think now is a good time to discuss these matters, as we're seeing the collapse of the dollar imminent and massive social unrest about to happen. So I want to thank you, Ron Miller, for taking the time out, and we'll definitely have you back real soon.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, Ron. You bet. All right, this is Ron Miller with technocracy.org. Please go to that website. Check it out. If you're a student, college, whatever, please review that. There's something interesting going on there. Thank you very much, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Ka-ching.
You're listening to AchieveRadio.com. The future is now.
Hidden deep within you is an unstoppable power. If you want to deepen your relationships, supercharge your productivity, and enjoy more life energy than you've felt in years, then visit LetNothingStopMe.org to learn more about Secrets of Being Unstoppable by Guy Finley. This new audio program will give you the knowledge you need to enjoy the happiness and success your heart longs for. That's Guy Finley's Secrets of Being Unstoppable at LetNothingStopMe.org.
Finding Your Way, Intuitive Messages for the Mind, Body, and Spirit, brings together for the very first time two psychic mediums and a medical intuitive for a fascinating all-day workshop, Saturday, April 9th in Andover, Mass. Join Hay House author and psychic medium John Holland, medical intuitive and author Carol Reitberger, and psychic medium Lauren Rainbow for an enlightening day as they deliver readings and messages from the other side. Tickets are available now through johnholland.com.
PowerHits.com.